Just days after George Floyd was killed by officers from the Minneapolis Police Department, thousands of people marched in protest here in South Dakota. Rapid City protests included clashes between protesters and self-described supporters of President Donald Trump. The Sioux Falls outcry included confrontations with police after nightfall and several arrests. The mayor of Sioux Falls is still tweeting about support for law enforcement in trying times. Why did this death of this man by these officers create such an ongoing response across the nation and here at home? How are calls to defund the police or abolish the police changing the national dialogue? Jelani Cobb is a staff writer for The New Yorker. He's a journalism professor at Columbia University and a frontline correspondent. He's been covering this issue nationwide for years. He joined us with the big picture perspective.
I was talking with James Stewart, who is the head of the police union in Newark. And we were looking at a video in which an officer, there's a dispute, there's a kind of verbal confrontation between the officer and someone else. And then in the midst of it, the person walks away and turns around to walk back. And as he turns back around, the officer swings and knocks him unconscious. And then when he hits the ground, there are several more blows that rain down on his head. And that, I think, seemed excessive. I think many people would see that and think that it was excessive. And Mr. Stewart was talking about what's permissible under the law. This is not, you know, an officer is allowed to do this, an officer is allowed to do that. He says there's all this public outrage, but they don't know what the law actually permits officers to do. And I was trying to say to him, I think that's exactly the conflict. People are concerned about how much force the law allows police officers to use. And then, quite frankly, the leeway that they're given is partly a measure of the effectiveness of the police union itself, having negotiated and lobbied, you know, lawmakers for these possibilities, for these kinds of permissions. And so I think that we were talking about two different definitions of what officers can or should do.
Jelani Cobb's new frontline film is called Policing the Police 2020. You can watch it on the PBS app or on SDPB's Passport. Well, how are calls to defund the police, police the police, or abolish the police changing the national dialogue? Things like reducing incarceration, recidivism, and racial bias training are now topics of common conversation. But can the titles used for the movements focused on change in policing get in the way of the actual substance of the movements? Terry Liggins is the founder of the Hurdle Life Foundation, and he joins us with this take.
What we're working to do together is change the culture. We're looking to change the culture of community corrections. We're looking to change the culture of law enforcement, of judicial precedent. We're looking to change the culture of what it means to be community. And whenever you look at culture change, you look at different aspects of culture, like food, like music, like language. Language is a big part of changing culture. So that's one of the things that really concerns me as an educator, is some of the language we're using in this attempt for change and unity and coming together. If you are trauma informed and you recognize how trauma works, then you know that the brain and the body will react a certain type of way to intimidation, fear, and threat. Whenever anybody, any human being is faced with intimidation, fear, or threat, their body biologically will respond with fight, flight, or freeze. So for me, Lori, I don't subscribe to using extreme language that says we're going to eliminate anyone or anything. So I'm very cautious and concerned about the language that's so loaded with abolishment or policing the police. Like, those types of things, for me, when I look at culture, are concerning for me, and I raise the awareness for that with my other colleagues as we're looking to have healthy dialogue, looking to have healthy conversation. We got to realize we're all human beings here. We're all wanting to sustain ourselves and our livelihood, and threatening the extermination of anyone or anything. The science of trauma will tell you what you're going to get in response is someone ready to fight you, someone ready to flee, or someone ready to freeze up. And that's not how we do the work together.
With 24 years of service, it's safe to say retired Rapid City Police Chief Carl Jaggeris knows what it means to walk the beat in South Dakota. He joined us shortly before his retirement for a look back at a changing profession and a look ahead at the new work at hand.
In my policing career, I've always seen myself, especially as the police chief, my primary duty has been chief peacekeeper for our community. And really, the enforcement aspect of policing is a smaller amount of the workload than the quality of life issues and the really compassionate care for human beings that are dealing with challenging circumstances. And then, just on a personal note, I have a very deep internal desire to serve others that do find themselves in vulnerable situations. My personal family history involves both my father and my grandmother and my aunt living in a displaced persons camp for 5 years. That was during my dad's childhood, from about the time he was 5 till 10 years old. And so I have a strong desire to give back and to serve people that might be in similar circumstances where they're vulnerable and they need help from others to find some hope and to move forward in a positive way.
Yeah. Let's look back a little bit. 1995 mm-hmm. is when you joined the police department. Is that correct? Do I have that right?
It is. I was a new entry-level police officer, and looking back, I can tell you I had no idea what I was getting myself into. But it has been overall very rewarding. There's been a lot of tragedy along the way. I find, you know, it's been very valuable to me to be able to help people deal with those tragedies. Of course, our department had some of its darkest days in 2011. That is something that every member of our department will carry with us. But looking back, I'm going to look back on some of the positive things that have occurred. And I'll just tell you that I think that our department and really the city of Rapid City has really taken a progressive tone. There is so much positive momentum in Rapid City regarding making things better. And we've made great progress over the last several years. And there's more good to come. So it's time for me to step to the side and let others continue to, you know, carry efforts forward.
Mike Wagner has worked with organizations, teams, and executives on the challenges of leadership and culture. He earned a master's in public administration from the Harvard Kennedy School and a Bush Foundation Leadership Fellowship. He's a former South Dakota state lawmaker, and he's founder of the blog uncommonwisdom.org. Mike joined us for a discussion about the divisive issue of defunding the police and the complexity of structural change.
So when we look at the uncommon wisdom of this, where do you want to begin with defunding the police and grow it into something different in a more useful direction?
Well, the term that I've coined is what I call pre-funding the police. Because if you listen to the most thoughtful thinkers, the most thoughtful leaders who are talking about defund the police, reform our police departments, I think what you'll really hear is that a lot of what police do is not necessarily about, you know, violence and so forth. They're taking care of, I mean, it can be violent, don't get me wrong, but the problems that they're addressing are social problems, family conflicts, poverty, drug addiction. And the police become the last line of defense, or in some cases, the only line of defense. You know, I've got a neighbor who's on drugs and causing problems, so I call the police. There's nothing else to be done. And what really thoughtful leaders, I think, are trying to say with this defund the police is they're actually saying, let's pre-fund this community need. And that's the term I like to use. Let's move money upstream, that if some of our police are forced to intervene in addiction problems, how do we address the addiction problems where they're occurring? People becoming addicted to drugs, or people currently addicted to drugs that need social support and social help. If you think about it, you know, calling the police is a pretty aggressive and temporary step. You know, the police come in and, you know, they might take somebody to the emergency room, or they might break up a fight but they're not really well equipped to permanently or to significantly deal with the social problems that are often at the root of what they're dealing with. It's funny, I was at a meeting in the Black Hills about a week ago, and it was a community neighborhood meeting and what have you. And people were talking about gravel and the roads and, you know, kids speeding on the roads. And somebody said, well, we need the sheriff to be more present. And the comment that came back is that the sheriff's department does not, in Western South Dakota, doesn't have enough funding to, you know, patrol neighborhoods because they're spending so much time intervening in domestic abuse situations. And so here you have, you know, rural America, rural South Dakota, Western South Dakota, and the number one issue, you know, of one sheriff's department is domestic conflict. I had another sheriff in Eastern South Dakota who I was at a Kiwanis program, and he said, you know, meth is the number one problem that the county faces. And this is a county of, you know, 10,000 people. And meth addiction is the number one problem. So again, I think the conversation needs to be about pre-funding our social concerns, that rather than, you know, yes, using the police as the last line of defense, what do we actually need to do upstream in order to really solve the social problems that are manifested by a phone call to the police? Yeah. And so it's about moving money. And this does take leadership, because leaders have to say, look, what we're doing doesn't seem to work, right? Classic definition of insanity. We can spend more money on more police, but is that really going to solve the social problems, the broken families, the domestic violence, poverty issues, elderly at home alone, whatever the case may be? And how do we move money upstream so that we solve these problems before you ever have to call 911?
Achieving ongoing partnerships within communities and funding upstream services to reduce crime is a huge task and will take a lot of time and patience. But to paraphrase writer James Baldwin, how long are people expected to wait for progress? Institutions might measure success through gradual improvements, but human beings, loved ones left behind, people afraid of being targeted by police or even afraid of going for a run like Ahmed Aubrey, or being shot in their own living spaces like Breonna Taylor. For many people, patience is no longer a virtue. Americans are taking to the streets to demand action and demand it now. Those protests have now cost the lives of protesters and police officers. What are we to do? We step outside into our own communities, we talk to our neighbors, to the officers who serve our neighborhoods, and we work hard here in South Dakota to ask the tough questions this moment demands we ask. And we take action together, because progress is our responsibility. The In the Moment podcasts are produced by SDPB's Josh Heyer. I'm Lori Walsh. Thank you for listening.